Welcome back, dear listeners, to the Dish with Dina podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in, whether you have just found us or you are returning. We are celebrating National Nutrition Month at the time of this recording in March, but we're also making time for Kidney Awareness, which is being spotlighted this month as well. I was going to interview a fellow dietitian who specializes in kidney health, but we had to reschedule. So I'm going to take over and give you a bit of an overview in this episode, and then I'll let her go into more detail and take the wheel when we find a new date to chat. I'd also encourage you to go back and listen to episode 34 with kidney dietitians Jen Hernandez and Melanie Betts, where we provide some guidance for anyone recently diagnosed or managing a condition with questions to ask during your doctor's visit and to help you gain some insight into this specialty. So sit back, enjoy the conversation, and let's dish. Today, we will be covering an overview of chronic kidney disease, also known as CKD, and addressing how we manage this particular condition with dietary interventions, nutrition modifications, food, etc. As I mentioned in the introduction to this podcast episode in the audio version, if you happen to be listening to that right now, you're going to hear me duplicate some information where I was going to be interviewing a kidney dietitian, somebody who specializes in renal disease, and we had to reschedule our conversation. But I still wanted to capture some information to share with you because March is many things. It's National Nutrition Month. We had Registered Dietitian Day last week, and now I am focusing on kidney awareness. We're this Kidney Awareness Month as well in March. So I wanted to give a little bit of insight into this. And then once I get a chance to have my fellow colleague, my dietitian friend, come and interview with me, I'll let her elaborate a little bit more on that. So let's give some insight and guidance into what this even means about what kidneys are and understanding the basic physiology of what kidneys do in our body. Do you even know where the kidneys are in your body? I'll explain it to you if you don't know. So first, starting with primary risk factors. Okay, so let's just start on a more higher level of understanding issues that develop into something that could affect your kidneys. If you happen to be dealing with or managing diabetes, type 1, type 2, doesn't matter what it is, especially if you have issues with keeping things like that under control, that could eventually turn into complications that can affect your kidneys. But we also see that anytime you happen to be on medicine of any kind, especially long-term, it's going to be metabolized in your body in one of two ways, either through your liver or through your kidneys. So your kidneys are part of the filtration system. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a sec. And that helps with metabolizing and processing those medications, among other things. So the buildup over time can affect your kidney health, especially if you are dealing with high blood pressure. So high blood pressure, that's the factory going on right there with your kidneys. But if you are taking high blood pressure medication, again, the consequences could also be dealing with chronic kidney disease down the line. I just want a side note here for a second. I'll probably talk about this a little bit more as well as I go through this overview, that it's important for you to feel empowered by whatever I'm sharing with you here. And of course, my disclaimer is always, I'm not your dietitian. So just, you know, take this into consideration that it's just educational information for you to take into account when you're going to your doctor's offices. But make sure you're reading that fine print when they prescribe pharmaceuticals to you. Make sure that you speak with them about what's known as informed consent, meaning that if you take anything in medicine wise, whether it's short-term or long-term, what some side effects, et cetera, might be. Okay, let's go back to the risk factors with kidney disease. I'm going to be on and off my soapbox, so apologies in advance for the erraticness of this episode. All right, heart disease, anything that is vascular in our body is going to be affecting the kidneys. And, you know, side note, we have a lot of blood going on in our bodies. So thereby anything that is dealing with blood systems is probably going to affect the heart, the kidneys as well. So heart disease, right? High blood pressure can increase heart disease, can increase stroke. Having heart disease can then in turn also affect our kidney function and our kidney health. If you have a family history, so this is where I sometimes try to say, you know, just because you might be genetically predisposed to certain conditions, if you have people in your family who have had to manage or have been diagnosed with certain conditions, in this case, like chronic kidney disease, I wouldn't necessarily just think that that is the end result for you, because we don't know how other people manage their own health. We don't know what they're eating, what other environmental factors come into play, socioeconomic issues, accessibility to healthcare. But it's one of those things that it's just nice to understand sometimes. Obviously, if you don't know your family's history and you have the ability to ask them, that would be something I would encourage you to do. Or if you do not know your family lineage, or you're adopted, or for whatever reason, you don't know who your biological parents might be, you might not know this information. So that's why it's important to keep up, if you can, with your annual screenings and getting checked at your doctor's regularly. All right, so moving through to the next discussion around the overview of the kidneys, you have two. That's, you're usually born with two under normal circumstances. They're about the size of your fist, a balled up fist. So they're not very large. They don't take up a ton of room in your body, but they are quite the powerhouse. They remove waste products from our body, and they also help remove extra water from certain chemical reactions that are going on within our blood systems. And they also help with making urine. So when we urinate, that is a process part of our kidney functioning. They're located just below the rib cage. And if you're watching me right now instead of listening to me, this is funny because I'm actually pointing to the front of my, underneath my ribs. Technically, they're in the back. So they're more towards the back on the side of your spine. So that's where you can find them. So, you know, if you're feeling pain of any kind and it's throbbing and it's consistent, then that could be an indication of some kidney issues, especially kidney stones, which I might not go into too much detail today just for sake of brevity for this episode, but that's something to keep an eye on. If there is some pain, it could also just be a pulled muscle. You know, sometimes those things are somewhat similar, but I would always say please get checked if you're noticing any consistent patterns of pain or discomfort or whatever the case may be in that particular region of your body. They also help release hormones that make red blood cells through our body. So I might have said this in one of the episodes before. Red blood cells generate or regenerate about every 3 to 4 months or so. So for people who have issues with kidney disease, heart disease, high cholesterol, etc., you're probably going to be asked to go see your doctor every 3 months, because that is kind of when the blood cells regenerate and you're getting a new kind of cleaner reading when you take your blood test. The rest of us who might not have any chronic conditions and are just going for our regular screenings and physical exams, our annual exams, you only have to go about once every year. So in case you are dealing with a diagnosis or a condition you have to manage, it's important to make sure that you keep up with those follow-up visits. The kidneys also help regulate blood pressure. I just got done talking about blood pressure. Hello, heart and issues like related in that vicinity. And we may talk a little bit about blood pressure, like what causes blood pressure. Yes, your kidneys are regulating that, but there's a lot of other factors like stress, right? Mental health, self-care, also, I don't know, whatever else is going on in your environment or your world that might affect your blood pressure as well. And they also help in a chemical function, a physiological function of helping keeping our bones strong. Bones have also blood issues related to that. So everything's kind of interrelated in our bodies and our systems. Each of your kidneys is made up of about 1 million, that's right, in those tiny little fist-sized organs, about 1 million filtering units called nephrons, N-E-P-H-R-O-N-S, which is why if you go to a kidney doctor, they're known as nephrologists, N-E-P-H-R-O-N-S. R-O-N-S is nephrons. Within each one of those millions of filtering units, those nephrons, they include something called the glomerulus and a tubule. So I'm getting a little fancy with all my scientific terms here, but basically this is how your kidneys filter that blood, take it in, take it out, and returns some of the needed substances back into our blood, and then removes the waste product to excrete that so that things don't build up in our system, so that we are able to digest, metabolize, and then out the rest of that stuff goes. So let's talk about specifically the five stages of chronic kidney disease and understanding some lab values. And again, like I said, this might be a bit of a sh well, we'll see. I talk a lot. So this might be a shorter episode. And then when I finally do get to interview my dietitian colleague who is a kidney specialist, I'll have her go into a little bit more detail. But we have stages within a lot of different diagnoses. Kidney disease has stages 1 through 5. We diagnose that through blood tests called the glomerular filtration rate or the GFR. So, if you think of this in terms of normal healthy functioning kidneys are at 100% level, your GFR would be at, say, 100, okay, for argument's sake. As the kidneys start malfunctioning or disease starts stepping in, that GFR is going to get lower and lower and lower. And your doctor might say to you, your kidneys are functioning at 50% or at 33% or at 25%, et cetera. So, what that GFR rate tells you is how well your kidneys are working in order to remove the waste from your blood from your body. So this is important because building things up is a level of toxicity. That is why a lot of times dietitians will step up and kind of get a little all up in arms when we hear people saying that they're going on a detox. You don't need to necessarily do that. That's not technically an actual term. Could be part of fad diets and marketing terms, but your body detoxes already through its liver and through its kidneys. So they're due if you're keeping everything good and functioning properly, your body's going to take care of that for you. We also diagnose kidney issues through urine tests, something called the dipstick test. This is going to show different colors. If something is present in the urine, it'll show the doctor a certain color or like a litmus test in that in specific case. There's also something called a ratio with a creatine and something called a BUN, which is blood, urine, and or urea, technically urine, and then nitrogen. So there's a lot of different ratios that go on that tell the doctors whether or not something is amiss, if something is an abnormal lab value. So I share this with you because when you get a metabolic panel done, a blood or a urine test done, and the doctor maybe shares that information with you, or you can see that information, those results on your patient portal, you're looking at a wide variety of acronyms that you're like, what does this even mean? So I'm explaining this to you so at least you understand what you're looking at and what it entails. So if things are set up on your patient portal or on your lab test results in alphabetical order, you might not realize that the BUN and the GFR and some other diagnoses, or I should say, some other tests in there are related to your kidney functions. It's not going to say kidneys and then colon, and then here's the stuff that goes related to it. So, this is why it's important for you to ask questions of your healthcare providers and make sure that you get some clarification if you are unsure of what you're seeing. So, the five stages of kidney disease starts with stage one. Again, I mentioned that. If you think of it as 100% fully functioning, perfectly healthy, normal kidneys, if they start deteriorating, if we start having a normal functioning kidney, but it's starting to get a little bit lesser, right? So stage one is going to be okay, fine. And it's about like 90 or above where we're in good working order. Stage two, with a little bit of a mild loss of kidney function, that is going to show your GFR levels at between 60 to 89. So again, think of it in terms of percentages, maybe, if that makes it easier for you, that now you're at like 60 to 89% functionality. Stage three becomes more mild to severe loss of kidney function, and that GFR range spans from 30 to 59. Usually, if you go back to listen to, I think it's episode 31 with two of my other kidney dietitian friends, you'll hear us talking about how sometimes you do not even know that you have kidney disease until you hit stage three. So again, depending on maybe, background information, blood pressure issues, whether or not you're managing or are at risk for diabetes, if you have a family history of kidney disease, this might be a good time to discuss with your doctor. Let's just keep our eyes on my kidney function just so we can catch it before it progresses too late. Okay, so stage four, now you're starting about severe loss of kidney function, and this is kind of the not the calm, but like the storm-ish before the next storm. So severe loss of kidney function, your numbers, your GFR numbers are going to be between 15 to 29. Again, think of it as about 15 to 29% of functioning kidneys. And here is where the issues start occurring, where if you have anything that's running between 15 to 29%, it's going to be a little harder to kind of scale back and get that Back up. So here's the issue with kidney disease is it just progresses. You can hold it steady, maybe with medicine, management, food and nutrition modifications, and that sort of thing. But there is no cure from it. Once you're progressing through it, you're moving through those stages. And obviously, as your kidney function gets a little bit worse, it's going to be harder to bounce back from that. So, stage five, what is also known as ESRD or end stage renal disease, is when your GFR is about equal to or less than 15. So now you're working with 14%, 12%, 9% of kidney failure, right? So in this case, it is very common for your doctor to recommend one of two things, depending on who you are, how you can accommodate what is about to be offered for you in treatment. They'll either ask you to go on to what is known as dialysis. So again, I'm not going to go too far into details with the system of that and the treatment of that. We'll wait for my dietitian friend to explain that a little bit more in detail. But that's basically showing up to a clinic, a dialysis center, X amount of times a week, X amount of hours a day during your visit, and you're hooked up to a machine that helps filter that blood for you. It acts like an artificial kidney because your kidneys are no longer functioning. And that can extend your life pretty well, right? If you're in your 40s, 50s, 60s, whatever, and you have a pretty good quality of life to begin with, that can give you a little bit of extra oomph to make sure that you're able to go about your business. However, it can be obviously quite time consuming. You do have to make accommodations to get to and from the clinic. It could also be quite draining because think about any kind of process like that for 3 hours sitting in a chair while your blood is getting refiltered in some way, that can really take a toll on your energy levels. So you might also have a little bit of restructuring with your schedule to make sure that you are able to accommodate whatever higher energy days that you have, and then leave some of that low energy stuff that you might have to work on, or maybe just take some time off and recuperate from the dialysis center session on the days that you are you going for treatment. So that's number one, right? The dialysis is usually the less invasive type of treatment that we offer. The other one is transplant, meaning that you are finding somebody else who is a good match blood-wise that can give you the kidney, whether they are living or they have deceased. But that also, as I'm sure if you know anything about transplants, that this could be a very long wait. You have to get matched. There's a lot of issues that go along with it, in addition to being on a lifelong regimen of medicine so that your body does not reject that new organ, and that could lead to other complications, infections, et cetera. So these are discussions that you, if you are going to be diagnosed with that, or if you know someone who is, that you'll be having these discussions with your doctor to make the best decision for you. Okay, so a little snippet on getting the disease and how we might manage the disease. And then we have some diet guidelines. So this is where it gets a little tricky. People with chronic kidney disease almost have to follow somewhat, I don't want to say of like an opposite approach to what is usually recommended, but because we are focusing on a few nutrient items that can exacerbate the kidney condition, that is protein, that is phosphorus, that is potassium, that is sodium, and that's also fluid. So, if you are also managing, say, high blood pressure, a lot of the food modifications and recommendations that we would provide to you to help you manage high blood pressure are not going to work in the kidney discussion. High phosphorus foods, high potassium foods are all your vegetables, all your plant foods, all a lot of things fall within that, those nutrient values. And so here is where, depending on the stage that you're at, and also you know me, I'm highly recommending speaking with a dietitian, not just any old dietitian, probably a renal dietitian who knows this a lot better than some of us who are not specialized in this condition, where they can set you up with a very, very specific meal plan. They can give you lists of foods that you might not have to completely avoid, but that you would just have to maybe rejigger in your meals to make sure that on a day that you're eating X, you're not also eating X 3 times a day. So you're able to eat certain things at certain times of the week, and then you kind of rotate some stuff so that you are getting the benefits of those plant-based foods and those other foods that are very rich in nutritional value, but you're also staying within the confines of the limitations of what you can take in so that it doesn't affect or increase the disease state that you're in there. Okay, so what I tend to say to my patients as well, who might be along the lines of that, is definitely to make sure that they're keeping in touch with their doctor and their nephrologist, right? The specialist who talks to them about their kidney health, and then also working with a dietitian. I'm going to side note this for a sec because I've talked about this in some of my previous episodes and I've gotten my mom's permission. She has chronic kidney disease. We didn't know that until it was kind of borderline stage 3, stage 4. And she has slowly been progressing into the later stages of it pretty quickly. Unfortunately, like I said, when you're dealing with like 50% of something running and then 30% of something running and then 15% of something running, it's a little harder to be able to hold that steady from that point. So thankfully, as I became a dietitian, I was able to sit in on a lot of her discussions with her healthcare providers because she sometimes doesn't know the questions to ask. And what we've come to learn is that she was never, and again, I want to say, like, no offense to her healthcare provider because I love him. I love all of them. But they really should have hooked her up with a dietitian to help her understand what foods could potentially be an issue for her. So, So I want all of you who are listening to this to make sure that you advocate for that and know that just because a doctor is a doctor or a doctor is a specialist of something, medical doctors, that they're not dietitians. They didn't go to school for food and nutrition. They don't understand the complexities and the nuances for a patient by patient case, or also in the case of my mom, right, we have like a cultural and a generational thing there too. She was in her older years when she got diagnosed, a little bit more progressed, and she is also an Italian person. And so we love a lot of foods that could be an issue for her when she's taking these in. So she has to kind of monitor and moderate some of that. So thankfully, we were able to get some resources that I found online and also through some of the resources that I am able to access as a dietitian and give her some more guidance. She thought she had to cut everything out. That is not the case. That's usually not the case with anything, quite honestly, unless you have a severe food allergy towards something where you could die from eating it. Usually, we try to see how we can make foods fit within the disease state, again, so that you're getting some sort of not just nutritional value and positive stuff that comes along with food, but that you are able to enjoy life. I mean, if you're just sitting there eating for your disease and you don't get to have some fun stuff every once in a while, what's the point in anything? So we try to encourage people who have chronic kidney disease to focus on choosing and preparing foods with less salt and sodium. That's also going to benefit anybody who also has high blood pressure. But again, you need salt in your diet. So the usual recommendation is if you have the ability to control that and make foods at home that you can add salt to, odds are you're going to be better situated to manage your condition, because packaged foods, outside foods, things that we eat at restaurants, and even things like bread, right? Bread is technically a processed food. It's a packaged food. It comes from a different land, a food manufacturer that is making that particular food item. Those are usually going to be quite high in sodium. So if we're looking for foods on the back of the labels, on the back of the packaging, where you can see the labels written out, you have to know what you're looking for as far as what the sodium content is. And so that can be a little tricky too. Again, I don't want to go too into detail with that. So I might offer you to go check out some of the YouTube videos that I have on this, where I teach you about learning how to read a nutrition facts label, or coming to one of my webinars where I do that stuff too, because then we can really get into some of the guidelines that I present there. But usually, what you can see is if on the label itself, there's going to be the information about, in this case, the sodium content, 200 milligrams, 400 milligrams, 800 milligrams per serving of whatever that food is. Right next to that on the label itself is something called the percentage of the daily value, percentage DV. If that shows you, in this case, I would say like 20%, what that's saying is that this particular food item is providing you with about 20% of the recommended daily value of your sodium intake. So if you're eating a ton of high sodium foods, over the course of that day, or you're accumulating a lot of, takeout, and you're choosing convenience foods, and you don't have a lot of control over that sodium, that can become a risk factor for you. One thing's not going to make or break it, but if it becomes a pattern where it's kind of like, accumulating in your body, then that can definitely tax your whole system, both high blood pressure issues and kidney issues as well. So that's usually what we tend to make sure we're saying. And then, you can buy a low sodium version of something and just doctor it up at home so that you're not eating the blandest things possible. The next thing we tend to tell people is try to focus on the healthier quality types of proteins and also the amounts of proteins. So proteins are both in animal and plant form. You have fish and meat and chicken, eggs, and milk has protein in it as well. And when I try to I don't want people to have to track and log anything if they don't have to. If you want to, that's fine. But I usually try to say something that fits in about the size of the palm of your hand, or like a flattened handful of something, is anywhere between, say, 2 to 4 ounces. If you're in America, we use ounces. I don't know what that turns into grams. You can do the metric conversion on your own. So, any like a hamburger patty sits right in the palm of my hand, or a piece of fish, or a chicken breast would fit in kind of like the palm of my hand, maybe a little extend a little bit out. That's about, 3 ounces or so. That's a portion of protein. Plant-based proteins, so things like beans, nuts, whole grains. Fun fact, with whole grains, we actually don't want to encourage that too much with the kidney condition, because the phosphorus and other things that are found in the bran of the wholeness of that grain can also be an issue with kidney disease. But again, I kind of digress of saying like cut everything out completely unless you are speaking with a dietitian and you can see, look at your lab values, and you can figure out a meal plan that works for you. So a plant protein food would be about a half of a cup. And again, honestly, that's kind of a balled up fist, sort of. That's about 4 ounces, right? Half a cup. So solid foods or cooked proteins, you're looking at about that in a portion size. So we're trying to just be portion appropriate when we're making our meal plans for ourselves, especially when we are managing a chronic condition like kidney disease. And if we are still hungry, then it's about maybe being a little bit more frequent with our food intake. So eating small portions of things over the course of the day so that your body can take a minute to digest, metabolize, excrete, and then get back on track with following up. So there might be some trial and error in there too. Heart healthiness comes into discussion as well. As we said, kidneys are regulating a lot of things, very closely related to your heart too. So you do benefit from heart healthy foods. So lean cuts of proteins. The method of cooking is an issue here too. So nothing deep fried, trimming the fat off of stuff, limiting your intake of saturated fat. Okay, phosphorus. I mentioned phosphorus before. So if you've never heard of this word before, this is a it's an element, right? It's a mineral. So it's one of those micronutrients that we eat in our foods. And again, under normal circumstances, fantastic for us. But in the case of kidney issues, because of the filtration and the inability to kind of get rid of certain things, that could be an issue there. So we're talking about things that are low in phosphorus. You can look at that in the ingredients label, or you might have to Google things or look things up on the internet. So foods that are lower in phosphorus are fresh fruits and vegetables, breads, pasta, and rice. And again, I'm kind of smiling to myself. If you're watching this on video, you can see me. If you're listening to this, because there's also a hierarchy within foods that are low in phosphorus might be a little higher in potassium. And then you're kind of like, well, what do I get to eat? So foods that are higher in phosphorus, also, beverages, soda. So even if you're doing diet soda for whatever reason, soda is high in phosphorus too. So again, when I'm working with somebody who has kidney issues, I'm going through a dietary recall. I'm kind of like, what's a day in the life or a week in the life of you? Deli meats, fresh meat, poultry, that can have a high amount of phosphorus also. So we try to, again, kind of like mix and match certain things that could be generally healthy and be able to manage that disease without having to give up everything. In my mom's case, I think we have like, I don't know, I want to say like 20 or 30 foods that are totally fine for her. And she just kind of puts them on rotation, right? So on a day she eats one thing, she doesn't eat the same kind of version of that later on. And so she alternates over and over again. That's been working for her. All right, potassium I mentioned as well. So potassium is something that is found in a lot of the good whole healthy foods, apples, carrots, etc. They have potassium rich, but they are a little bit lower on the potassium level, whereas a higher potassium food, things like brown rice and leafy greens and things like oranges and avocados, and bananas, those are very high in potassium. Right, so you hear things like this and you think, well, oh my gosh, these are really good for me foods and I had to give them up. And again, I'm going to reiterate, this is why it's important to work with a dietitian, because we can tell you about how much is too much of anything and how you're able to incorporate those foods that even if they are higher in potassium, the kind of the load that you're carrying over the course of the day is really the issue, and the patterns that you're looking at is really the issue there too. We want to make sure that you can live a healthy life, manage your condition, but still enjoy your meals, be able to enjoy your meals. All right, so this wraps up our discussion around kidney health for today's episode. I hope that that was interesting for you. I will provide some resources on this episode, and then I encourage you to go back to either episode 31 with my kidney dietitian friends, Jen and Melanie, or stick around for as soon as I can reschedule my next podcast interview with my fellow colleague dietitian. Her name is Samantha. So as soon as she comes on board and we get to schedule our conversation, then we'll have a deeper conversation around that. And I hope that that will be something that you find interesting as well. Thanks so much for joining me. I hope to see you again or have you join in and listening to this in our next episode. As always, whether you are watching this or listening to it, please like, share, subscribe, follow, leave a review. Shoot me an email at info@dishwithdina.com. Let me know what other kind of topics I can cover for you. Eat well and be well, my friends. Take care of yourselves. Thank you so much for joining me this week on the Dish with Dina podcast. I am Dina D'Alessandro, registered dietitian, nutritionist, founder, and chief executive life changer at Dish with Dina. And I'm also your host. If you like what you heard, I would be so grateful if you could subscribe to this podcast, leave a review, and share this with others who you think might benefit from what we have to offer on these episodes. You can also join my mailing list at dishwithdina.com or email me at info@dishwithdina.com with questions, comments, feedback, and if you'd like to be a guest on a future episode, because everybody eats and we all have a story to share. I hope you tune back in next week when we dish again.